In a public hearing, and we will not be having a work session today on House Bill 3609, which has to do with marine reserves. And a lot of people have come in today to testify. I appreciate you all taking time to come in. And I do have some people who have come from pretty far away and need to get back, so I'm gonna take them first, and I will get to everybody. We're gonna
Madam
probably.
Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Some very brilliant, talented youth appear to have come to observe this committee hearing today. And I wonder if we could ask them to stand. We could recognize them and find out where they're from.
Well, we'll probably do that when they come forward, because we have a limited time.
Coming
today.
Forward? They're not coming forward, no.
Are all you here to testify? Are you all signed in?
No.
Ah, okay.
They're not.
Well,
where are you from?
Let me finish here, and then we'll recognize people.
Okay. So I'm at university.
Thank you. I just wanted to lay a little bit of groundwork here because we have right now. Is this all we have signed up to speak then?
That's
at this
awesome.
Point? Okay. So we're doing okay. I was thinking if everybody was here to speak, we're going to have to limit testimony, but we'll get everybody in. And now, if you would. Just, are you here as a group, as a class? All right. Do you have a spokesperson who would like to just tell us a little bit about?
Hi, my name is Courtney Dillard. This is my class, Political Communication.
Do you want to come up, Courtney, and we'll put you on the record here?
Okay.
Thank you.
Nice.
You have to start over and introduce yourself. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Courtney Dillard. Thank you so much for having us here today. This is my class at Willamette University in political communication, mostly juniors and seniors, and we're learning a little bit about the political process here in Oregon. Our whole semester will be focused on the special session and then the May primaries. So we're looking at governing first, and then we're going to look at campaigning.
All right.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you, and welcome.
And Chair.
Yes, Representative Krieger.
Are they juniors or what?
Juniors and seniors.
At Willamette.
That's what's wrong when you get my age. They look like high school kids.
He thinks you're in high school, right?
Or younger. I guess when you get to be 67, that everybody looks younger.
Representative Krieger, they're always going to be younger than you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much and welcome. I hope you enjoy your studies at the Capitol. It will never be boring, trust me. And I hope that some of you end up coming over here and serving your state in some capacity. So with that, I'm going to call the first people up. I'm going
to
call...
A little summary?
Yes, I forgot. I assume everybody knows what we're talking about. Sue Marshall is going to give a little summary of this bill. Thank you.
Chair Boone, members of the committee, for the record, House Bill 3609 provides that marine reserves and marine protected areas may be established only by amendment to the Oregon Ocean Resource Management Plan. It defines marine reserves and marine protected areas, limits the number of marine reserves and marine protected areas to no more than 9, and requires that amendments establishing marine reserves and marine protected areas include monitoring and enforcement procedures, and that these procedures be developed utilizing the aid and advice of the permanent scientific and technical committee and with input from coastal local governments and residents. It requires that marine reserves or marine protected areas shall be small enough to avoid economic or social impacts and large enough to provide scientific analysis of their benefit. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. And just for the committee's information, we received some suggested amendments from David Allen and John Griffith, and you've received those, and we'll have an opportunity to hear from David Allen via telephone.
Thank you, Sue. Did David want us to call him so he could partake in the entire... Or just to offer testimony?
I think he's tuned in at the moment.
Okay, good. Welcome, David, if you're here online. So first I'll call two county commissioners from Tillamook County, Tim Josie and Chuck Herleman. They know the drill. And welcome to my committee again. And for those of you who don't know, I used to work for Tim Josie when he was in his seat as his legislative assistant.
That explains a lot.
You
better watch you. You're a little older than I am.
Well, my name is Tim Josie, Tillamook County Commissioner, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association. And Chuck Hurlman is the chair of the Tillamook County Commission this year. And so I'll go first, and he will go second. First thing that I would like to say is thank you, Representative Boone, for having this bill before us. We support it. And then secondly, it's wonderful to see you up there chairing this.
Thank you.
Representing us well, and I'm just delighted to be here in front testifying before you and the rest of this committee. A few days ago, Chip Trehune came to Tillamook, and he visited. He had several forums on the Oregon coast, and I saw that guy in action for the first time, and I got to say that he just did a wonderful job. I was really impressed with his expertise and his ability and his empathy towards us, and so I think that the governor really made the right move in terms of putting a hold on everything and then having some listening sessions, because Chip really did understand what our concerns were, and unless he's a wonderful actor, I think he really did empathize with our needs. And so I think hats off to him and hats off to the governor for allowing or for instituting that process. The second thing that I'd like to say is that I'm very pleased that John Griffith has finally been appointed to OPAC. I think this is a positive move for the governor's office and for the Oregon coastal communities. There really wasn't anybody else on the southern Oregon coast that could have filled that role like he is doing. And so I'm glad that issue finally got resolved, and I'm sure that as time goes by, everybody will concur with that. I know John very well. He's a very knowledgeable person. Very few people dig as deeply as he does, and so that's great. The second thing that I'd like to say is that the OPAC has engaged with the Oregon Sea Grant with their outreach program, and so I really appreciate what they're doing in terms of talking to the coastal communities first. This is very important. In my handout, I'll just work through this. I won't spend a lot of time going through this because there are a lot of people here, but the reason why we support the bill is because at its very heart, it says legislature must be involved. And we've always been saying that to the governor's office. There are three letters that talk about the various issues, one from Tillamook County, and basically the first paragraph speaks to the legislature being involved, and then the second one, this is as a threshold, or second paragraph, as a threshold matter, of just a substantial commitment of financial resources that only the legislature can provide will be needed to undertake, implement, and administer such an initiative. To date, no resources have been committed to inventory Oregon's territorial sea, which is the first 3 miles, for baseline information needed to site marine reserves. There's presently no state funding to research the efficacy of marine reserves in state waters, including the information that would be needed for adaptive management. So I'll stop with that first letter, because I think that that really underlines our concerns. The second one is a resolution from Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, which I chair. I'm just going to read the first three whereases. Whereas the state of Oregon has not committed resources to inventory Oregon's territorial sea, which is the first 3 miles, as I said earlier, to provide baseline information needed to support a marine reserve siting process for state waters, whereas the state of Oregon has not committed resources to monitor and enforce a marine reserve or a limited system of marine reserves in state waters if marine reserves are established, and then the third one I'll read is, whereas the state of Oregon has not committed resources to research the efficacy of marine reserves in state waters, such information that will be needed for adaptive management. so basically, when you get to the now, therefore, be it resolved, our message will slow this process down, get the legislature involved, find the funding, find the justification, so on and so forth. Then the third document is a letter that I signed as the chair from OCZMA. And it basically says the same thing. This is the state of Oregon needs to ensure local socioeconomic concerns are factored into the evaluation of marine reserves. And the state of Oregon needs to ensure adequate resources. And then I won't go any further on that one. The state of Oregon should anchor a marine reserve siting process at the local level, an inclusive process that takes full advantage of local knowledge and maximizes local buy-in to the process. So then the next document, I won't go into the next document in any detail because there are a lot of people here, but this is a resource that I put together based on some information that I got from OCZMA, and it's basically a four-page bulleted outline of what's happened with the Oregon coast back at the time we first got here up until today. The bottom line is that we have a lot of regulations. I think when you get some time, read through this. The message is that between the state and federal government, we have been very regulated, and I think for good reasons and good purpose. And the bottom line is today our ocean resources are very healthy, and so which really begs the question, what's the purpose of marine reserves? Because we, in effect, are doing everything that we ought to be doing on our oceans. So we're saying in the end that there are going to be marine reserves, yet you need to justify it, and then you need to make sure that there is adequate monitoring, enforcement, and science involved so that you get something good out of this. And the most important factor is that you don't hurt the folks on the Oregon coast. There should be no economic impact on the folks on the Oregon coast. We've been hurt many, many times in the past, as you know, Representative Boone, and we just cannot afford to take another hit. And so the last document that I'm going to give you that I've got, and this actually comes from key conclusions regarding the ESU viability. ESU stands for evolutionarily
significant unit.
Yeah, I always have to stumble over that one. But that one came from the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and this was a report, biannual report, volume 2, 2003-2005. And I pulled out actually the second page in this document, and you can see on there, you can pull the full document out if you go online. It's not too hard to find. But the last page, if you'll bear with me for a minute, on the far left, you'll see relative threat to ESU viability in 1997. That was conducted by NOAA Fisheries, and they looked at a number of different indicators of viability, and they had high, all of them high except for one, which was medium, and then the Oregon Plan was put in place, and then in 2005, ODF&W conducted their own study, and they came up with all low threats except for two. One was fishery or marine habitat, and then the second one was stream complexity, and I'd like to talk about those two so that you understand what they really are. Marine habitat really speaks to the El Nino, La Nina periodic events and the upwelling, and so there's very little we can do about that. In terms of coho, is, as you probably know, don't go too far off the Oregon coast. I mean, they just cruise up and down within 200 miles of where they come out, and so they're really trapped in that environment. Chinook salmon head either north or south. Most of them head north into the Gulf of Alaska, and so if they can get through a desert-like condition off of our Oregon coast because there's a lack of upwelling. They do very well in the Gulf of Alaska. Coho are because of their habits, are really impacted when the food chain has been disrupted because of the lack of upwelling. That's the problem with marine habitat, and that's the reason why they call it medium. The second one is stream complexity, and some people would say, that's the aha. You know, we don't have enough, you know, trees in the riparian zone and that sort of thing. That's not what this is all about. This is the stream complexity once you get out of the forest and into the alluvial fans, which is where we all have developed. 85% of all of our wetlands have been drained ever since we showed up, and you know, so we could have farmland and that sort of thing. The only way you can fix that is to actively develop programs to reclaim marshlands and wetlands. And Tillamook County's been very aggressive in those efforts, and so it doesn't have any stream complexity. It has nothing to do with our forests. It has it's the off-channel rearing habitats during the winter flood events. Baby coho need to be off-channel someplace where they're protected from this huge torrent of water heading down the street and streams or the rivers. And if they don't have that protection, they'll get washed out into the sea before they're adapted for it. And that's the major problem that we have. And so when people start talking, if people come up to you today and talk about coho being relisted, and this is another reason for having marine reserves, they don't know what they're talking about because it's two different issues. So I'll stop with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Commissioner Pelosi?
That's very interesting.
Thank you.
He knows everything.
Well, Madam Chair, I did know that Commissioner Josie knows everything, but you put it very succinctly today for me, which I appreciate.
Thank you.
Sometimes you put it a little bigger than I can grasp.
I'm not sure how to take that.
With a smile.
Well, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Identify yourself for the record.
Oh, pardon me. Commissioner Charles Hurlman, Tillamook County Chair. And thank you for having us here, the chance to testify, and I agree with and it's hard. Tim is a hard act to follow. We were on the way in, we were saying, well, who should go first? Should I go first? And I says, well, what are you going to talk about, Tim? And then he, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought, well, if you're doing the science, then I'll follow up. And everything he said he wasn't going to talk about, he talked about.
That happens too.
So what I want to do is to reiterate, we in 1994 the legislature put into the Territorial Sea Plan a very good document, as well as in 2001 it was backed up. It talks about the local interests, the how it's well-rounded in that document, as well as they put together 33 sanctuaries. Now, I got to go into history a little bit here. In the Dust Bowl, the farmers created a soil and water for education to help the farmers do their farmland. So they instead of plowing against the grain of the hill or allowing the erosion to happen to lose their soil, they come up with techniques and studies of how to do the correct farming. I think as we move out into the sea, we should learn from the past. We don't go forward and create laws and sanctuaries before we understand what we're doing. What we need to do is to study what is the proper thing to do. Maybe we need study areas first to actually see what our needs are for the ocean. So I urge you to, as you go forward with this, we do it scientifically. And again, Tim's a hard act to follow, and sometimes I don't like following him, but In this case, I really appreciated his testimony, and thank you. I could go on and talk to all the reasons, socially and economically, and every other reason why we need to be included, and why we need to be go slow on this, and why the legislature needs to be involved.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Commissioner Herleman?
Yes.
Representative Nelson will be back. She had to leave for something. I don't know how Wayne slipped out, though.
Well, but he seemed to have gotten an urgent message from his other committee, so I'm sure
he
he'll
is,
be
yeah,
back.
Representative
he's trying
Kruger
to be in two places.
And judiciary at the same time across the hall. Thanks very much. I'm going to call Pete Stauffer next, please. And welcome, Pete, back. I usually see Pete at the OPAC meeting, so this is a new venue. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. Chair Boone and members of the committee, for the record, my name's Pete Stauffer. I'm an Oregon resident and based out of Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. We're a grassroots organization, and we work on a range of different ocean and coastal issues, and our membership demographic is recreational ocean users. Surfers, divers, paddlers, swimmers, people that spend lots of time on the beach and on the ocean or in the ocean. And our activities include a diverse range of volunteer programs. We have a coastwide water quality testing program. We have four water quality labs on the coast. These are set up in partnership with schools and aquariums. We have different community projects that we're involved with, including those on the central and south coast. Collaboration with community leaders and different stakeholder groups. And also we've been engaged in the OPAC venue, as you mentioned, Chair Boone, since the year 2001. On behalf of our membership in the state of Oregon, I'd like to express our concern about House Bill 3609. The introduction of this bill is premature, we believe, given OPAC's ongoing planning efforts on marine reserves. As a stakeholder body, OPAC continues to make some significant progress in addressing a really complex issue. And this public process deserves the opportunity to continue its work in 2008, independent of legislative action. Additionally, we're concerned that House Bill 3609 could jeopardize some of the momentum and progress being made at the local level on marine reserves. Thanks to some inspired leadership at the local level, as well as Oregon Sea Grant's new outreach program, other ocean users, or many ocean users, I should say, are ready to, or in some cases already have, engaged in community-based planning efforts. And so we're concerned about the prospect of stalling the process at this juncture and potentially confusing some of those efforts and undermining some of the hard work of stakeholders and citizens invested in this issue. And the final point, we believe it's not practical to try to address this issue in the current session, given it is a short special session. Marine reserves are a contentious topic, as we all know, and we think it would be far more appropriate for the legislature to take action in 2009 when the planning work of OPAC has concluded and there's sufficient opportunity to give this issue the thoughtful consideration it deserves.
Thank you, Pete. Any questions for Pete? I appreciate you coming today.
Okay,
thank you very much. And next I'm going to call Terry Thompson, commissioner from Lincoln County. Terry, welcome.
Thank you.
I worked for him, too.
And did a great job, too.
Well, I'm here supporting House Bill 3609.
Do you want to identify
yourself? Oh, my name's Terry Thompson. I represent Lincoln County. And Lincoln County's number one job is fishing. We have a $100 million industry in the fishing industry in Lincoln County. It's a big portion of our jobs. What I like about 3609 is it codifies what the governor has told the fishing industry he's going to do. One of the things I've learned about California by talking to Michael McHenry and people, he owns the Merva W out of San Francisco, and people who fish in California, is at the last minute of the marine there's issues down there. They moved the goalpost, and if some fishermen lost the major portions of ground, they understood they weren't going to do. This bill simply does what the governor said he was going to do. And so making it so that the legislature is following up gives the fishing industry a lot of confidence to move forward with marine reserves. I think it will help actually the process come into existence. I've worked with the Nearshore Action Team in Depot Bay, and the parameters that they have used there is what the governor has outlined. To me, Oregon represents a little bit different situation than California, and I'll take a second to digress to the more generalized picture. Oregon has always been a leader in fisheries management. We've been done, I think, a credible job. We have basically the cleanest fisheries in the world here. If you examine them, very few of our fisheries have bycatch. There are, I'm not going to say we don't have some. And because of that, I think we're in a different situation. Our weather situation is different up here. We have a different set of fisheries than California does. The weather here is extreme. We basically haven't had any small boats in the ocean that could fish in the nearshore area, with the exception of the crabbers, which are not, I consider, small boats, at all for over 4 months. Basically, 6 months of the year, we're already under protection under the umbrella called just bad weather. So the pressure that's put on this ocean isn't quite the same. You couple that with a good fisheries management situation, and I don't think the necessity to have it happen in a short time frame. It doesn't mean we don't move forward, but I don't think there's this perception that some people want to paint that the ocean's going to collapse tomorrow if we don't do something today. It's just not the way it is at the state of Oregon. I also want to explain something else that is in the general picture. And that has to do with the words overfishing you hear all the time by these groups. Remember, Oregon was managing our fisheries and doing a good job. It was Washington, D.C. who changed the percentage of fish that we had to keep in reserve. And they used the term overfishing. The term that should have been used was undermanaged. And so a lot of people paint the fishing industry as doing something negative because of a terminology. Well, you couple all these things together, and I'm not going to tell you whether it's good or bad, but I'll tell you this bill does what the governor says, and it does what the fishing industry, some of the areas of the coast are trying to do, is to try to protect and create some protected areas along the coast. And when you codify this bill, it just gives us a lot more confidence that that's where we're moving forward to that goal.
Thank you. And he very modest, Terry has very modestly not told you he's a, how many years, fisherman?
I don't know what it is.
He would give up his age.
120.
That, so.
No, I think it's, I guess it's, I started when I was seven, so it's over 50 years. I'm 62, 55 years. And I've been involved in every step of fisheries management, from the movement of the 3-mile limit to the 12-mile limit over all these years. Fisheries management's been my passion. I actually studied some oceanography and fisheries management at OSU. I graduated in education. So,
you are an expert.
Well, through experience. And I do disagree with some science. Remember, there's some conflicting science around this. There are, not every scientist agrees on the effects of marine reserves in temperate oceans.
Well, we appreciate your expertise. Any questions for Commissioner Thompson? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Senator Johnson, would you like to join us? Okay. Okay. All right. I will call Jeremiah Feldman and Nicole Forbes come up together. And then I think we're going to get David on the phone next. Okay. So I'm trying to do this pro-con if I can, and we're about even here, so that should work out well. Welcome. And thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeremiah Bauman. I'm with Environment Oregon, a statewide nonprofit environmental organization. And this issue is a relatively new issue for us, but one which we and our members are very interested in. And we're very committed to working productively and cooperatively towards figuring out this question of how to establish appropriate marine protections. I just wanted to introduce myself, and then I'm going to pass it off to our new staff person, Nicole Forbes, to deliver our testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Boone, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify this morning. My name is Nicole Forbes, and I work for Environment Oregon, a nonprofit environmental advocacy group here in Oregon, with members throughout Oregon, including about 1,000 members on the coast. I'm sure I don't have to tell this committee that the coast is an incredibly important place here in Oregon. Obviously, for coastal communities and residents who make their homes and, in many cases, their livings off of the ocean, but also for all Oregonians, whether that be for birding, for fishing, whale watching, or even a family reunion. These experiences, too, are dependent on a healthy and thriving ocean and healthy and thriving communities. Unfortunately, all is not well within our ocean ecosystem, whether one looks at the dead zones that we have currently off the coast or declines in certain fish populations. There are problems that need to be addressed. Marine reserves and marine protected areas are an important tool for protecting our coastal and ocean environment, as well as for collecting scientific research to better guide our coastal management. The process for marine reserves, which was initiated by the governor, started within the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, OPAC, over the past year. This process is beginning to move forward towards nominations. We are certainly aware that there is a great deal of sensitivity around this issue in coastal communities, and we are fully committed to engaging in the OPAC process and in other outreach efforts to create a dialogue and establish a common ground within coastal communities. Unfortunately, we have significant concerns about House Bill 3609 and its effects on this process. Regarding the policy in the bill, we have two specific concerns. The first is the limit of 9 marine reserves and marine protected areas in Section 3, Subsection 1. These would be the first statutory and permanent limits on marine reserves and marine protected areas. In addition, any numeric limit on marine reserves would inherently be arbitrary. Both their effectiveness in protecting the environment and their potential impact on coastal communities would be determined by where the reserves are located and how large they are, and then how many that there are going to be. These questions need to be answered by a sound scientific process, and that process begins with the nominations through OPAC that hopefully will be continue to take in April. The second concern we have is located in Section 3, Subsection 3, and its language about economic impacts. We support minimizing any negative economic impacts and maximizing positive impacts a lot during the process. But this language is so restrictive that no impact of any kind would be allowed. Certainly, any marine reserve established will have some impact, and this language would prohibit the creation of a reserve even if it were positive. In addition, a short-term negative impact could be outweighed by a long-term positive impact, but the language, again, would not allow for this situation. As this marine reserves process moves forward, it must be based, again, in sound science, so that reserves can be used to further scientific knowledge, as well as protecting coastal ecosystems and communities. With just 3 weeks left in this session, these issues are too controversial to be adequately addressed, I believe. This process needs to continue to move forward, and we will continue to work towards finding a common ground with marine reserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Any questions for Nicole or Jeremiah?
Thank you. Appreciate your being here. You used as one of your reference points the dead zone to show that all is not well off the Oregon coast, or I should say the so-called dead zone. Can you tell me what your organization's understanding is of the cause of this phenomenon?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, I would not try to assert that our organization has a firm understanding of the cause. We use the example primarily to indicate that there are some problems out there in the ecosystem. We've certainly heard a lot of different causes, and our understanding is that a lot of the best researchers we have are working on understanding that. But again, we use it only as one example of some of the problems that are facing the environment and the people that depend on a healthy ocean for their living and their livelihood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring that up only because it's a bit of an inflammatory name that we've attached to something that we don't have the science, the scientific understanding of yet. And so I raise that cautionary note. It's concerning to the coastal communities, and we all want to understand our ocean. But the reference in the same sentence, all is not well, and dead are not good things, I don't think.
Madam Chair, Representative McCallum, very much appreciate that that feedback. That's very helpful. We certainly don't use it intending to inflame anything, but rather just to comment that there are some issues out there that need to be looked at and understood better.
Thank you.
Rep. Krieger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, regarding this issue, until recent years, we didn't even have the science to really, we haven't done the marine research to understand these so-called dead zones, but you could talk to Commissioner Thompson and others, and they've been aware of them for 50 years, the fishermen have, and guess what? They didn't fish there. They know that they moved, and they knew they came into a certain time of year when the upwellings were different, and there's a lot of science there. But to imply that we have done something as human beings that caused them, I mean, if you're going to jump to that conclusion, you really make some of your, the credibility of what you're saying really is difficult for me. So as Representative Cowan, I would assume most people, we want to have good science to tell us what we need to be doing. We need to be aware of the ocean's values. And as far as marine reserves for the purpose of fisheries management, that doesn't hold water no matter where you look. But marine reserves, the purpose of research and managing that ocean for future generations, for fisheries, for sustainability, there's merit in that.
And that's a great segue into my weekly plug for Rep. Roblin's bill that we hope to see in 2009 that establishes a central piece of for ocean research, using all the science, research that we know, and kind of a conduit for more and more. So all you guys who go into ocean research or oceanography, biology, fisheries, et cetera, would have automatic work, and it would be helping everybody as well as getting you your degrees. So, and we're looking forward to that.
Well, that's a very good idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks, Nicole, and thank you. Look forward to working with you, too. I'm going to call Frank Warrens, and then we're going to be making a phone call to David in case we have trouble getting a hold of him. And Frank comes to us from, I see him at OPAC, too, all the time, too. But for you, the students' information, there are three here who represent the coast. I represent the upper left coast. Representative Cowan is the mid-coast, and Representative Krieger is the lower end of the coast. So we have our entire Oregon coast represented here on the committee.
And I just coast through
this
committee.
She just coast through it, right?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Because there are people not in this room who are listening to this, maybe we should clarify OPAC, which we've used
Ocean Policy
too much
Advisory
today.
Council.
And it is a group that has been
advisory to the governor. Yes.
And I'm sure that our next
Mr. Warren,
the individual will explain that, but I just realized we were throwing that around.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to, when you can't see people. We apologize to those out in cyberspace, too. Welcome, Frank.
Good morning, Chair Boone and members of the committee. I'm Frank Warrens. I'm a member of OPAC, the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, and I chair a committee on OPAC called the Marine Reserves Working Group. We have a very representative cross-section of various interests from fishing communities to the environmental community on my committee that is currently very deep into the issue of establishing marine reserves for the state of Oregon. I'd like to start out by voicing one of my concerns, and I keep hearing it more and more, and that is a concern that the ocean is in dire trouble. I can tell you, as a member of the Pacific Fishery Management Council, this is patently false information. The ocean is not in trouble, certainly from the marine resources perspective, as well as the all the anecdotal information that we receive from fishermen regarding the health of the food web that supports all the commercially viable fisheries that we have off the state of Oregon. So I make that point because I'm concerned that the public is not getting the straight information or current information. Quite frankly, in the years that I've been on, a member of the PFMC, I've seen some very dramatic changes to the management system that we operate under from the federal waters inside of 200 miles, and consistently they're inside of 3 miles by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The management scenarios that we are experiencing right now are very, very strict with regard to harvest and when we can harvest and so forth. So the management system that we're operating under now is not only very stringent, but it is producing some very good positive effects in recovering several of the stocks that were determined to be overfished a few years ago. Some of these stocks are rebuilding far faster than their original rebuilding programs stipulated. So the good news is that we're doing a great job, and it's happening quicker than we anticipated. And with that, I'd like to move into the issue of House Bill 3609 with regard to marine reserves and why we are looking at marine reserves in Oregon. And as Representative Krieger just stated, back in 2002, the original OPAC 1, we call it, suggested to then Governor Kitzhaber that we establish a limited number of marine reserves, primarily for research to see if, in fact, our management was effectively taking care of the more nearshore stocks and those that are more sedentary. So with that, we've, I think, addressed the concern through the OPAC process and all the people involved in it, with regard to why we're establishing marine reserves. As you heard Commissioner Josie state, the Sea Grant is conducting this coming week. As a matter of fact, a very concentrated outreach effort to involve the fishing communities from Astoria to Brookings to get the fishing community to work with the environmental community and OPAC in proposing marine reserves based on their local knowledge and years of experience. And I think as your bill speaks to in under Section 3, the involving the fishing community where there is knowledge, quite frankly, that goes beyond the academic knowledge that we have. And as you heard earlier, there's a fairly significant level of disagreement among academia about the science of marine reserves and how applicable they are to the state of Oregon. With that said, regarding the bill, one of the concerns that we have already talked about is that it makes no sense whatsoever to implement a marine reserve if we don't first do a baseline study to see what's in that reserve to begin with, so we have some measurements of how effective setting that area aside to be monitored on a regular basis, as well as enforced. Those two things, monitoring and enforcement, are a significant cost factor to the citizens of the state of Oregon, basically the taxpayers. We're talking about millions of dollars per reserve over the long haul. Last Monday, we had a Marine Reserve Working Group meeting at which Oregon State Police reported to us the cost of one OSP enforcement officer at $250,000 per biennium, and that includes the cost of that FTE along with the equipment, vehicle, and so forth. They also voiced at the time that they would strongly recommend that Marine Reserves be placed in areas where they could be observed from shore for the purpose of enforcement, because there are no assets available to the state of Oregon for at-sea enforcement at this time, particularly in marginal weather. They have 24-foot rigid hull inflatable boats that in decent ocean conditions they can be out on the water to do enforcement. Enforcement then would be looked upon in a favorable sense if there was buy-in by the coastal and fishing communities, so that there was some ownership in the reserves established, which goes to the point that you're making the bill about the recommendation that Marine Reserves be established from the coastal community and fishing interests. The other issue currently is OPAC is working. We had a meeting this coming Monday that was canceled, and I'm concerned that we're going to lose some very valuable time to meet our current timelines, which was to launch the nomination process for Marine Reserves in early April. That now, in my opinion, is in jeopardy because an arm of OPAC, this Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, we call it STAC, is going to be conducting a workshop in late February or early March to determine a key part of Marine Reserves. And while the governor has stipulated that there will be 9 or less, the SAC workshop, the scientists and others on that committee, will be getting back to OPAC with a size and spacing. That's the unknown factor right now regarding reserves. While the governor stipulates that there'll be less than 10, 9 or less, it's important that we keep that number in mind, and I think it makes sense to my way of thinking to put that number in the statute. When you combine marine reserves with wave energy and other marine zoning that will be occurring or is in the process of going on right now in the state of Oregon, all of which foreclose fishing grounds to our existing fisheries, and quite frankly, the stringent fishing regulations that we operate under at the time are very confining, and to lose more grounds by implying that there should be more than 9 marine reserves is not a financial or economically viable consideration for this state with regard to the value of our fishing industry. And one other item, as I conclude, Madam Chair, is that I understand that there was an issue brought to the attention of your committee regarding modifying or amending the Ocean Resources Management Plan, that it would be in conflict with our essential fish habitat that is currently established by the PFMC through NOAA. And I can't give you the legal details because I don't have no legal background, but I can tell you that I've been on the PFMC long enough to learn when we have conflicts between the federal regulations and state regulations, the states are always under the gun to become consistent with federal regulations. So the establishment of essential fish habitat and other areas inside of the 3-mile limit would have to be consistent in state statute or regulations with the federal law. The state can be more restrictive, but they can't be less restrictive. So if you would like to know more about that, I'd be happy to refer you to people who have a legal knowledge of how that works. And, Madam Chair, that pretty well concludes, and I know I probably run over my lot of time, but there's a lot of things happening, and I just want to again state my support for this bill and everything that's in it, And the only other concern that I had that I don't see, and it may be in there, is the legislative funding that would be required under the current OPAC stipulations and criteria. The money needs to be identified and available for Marine Reserves.
Thank you very much, Frank. Any questions?
I got about a dozen.
Okay.
Frank, it's good to see you again. I'll just give these to you one at a time. These baseline assessments, we've all talked about how important that is. Do we have any cost estimates from looking what other states have done?
There may be some, Representative Krieger, Madam Chair, regarding the MLPA process in California. I'm not sure of that, but I do know that, and I've heard anecdotal information, that just the baseline for a single Marine Reserve, and this information is, as I understand, comes from ODFW, would be in the neighborhood of $90,000 to $100,000 of research time in order to establish baseline information. And regarding baseline, it's been brought to my attention that when the PFMC established the Rockfish Conservation Area, which is 150,000 square miles, give or take a few, depending on the time of the year, off the West Coast, the tragedy of that was that there was no baseline information when that conservation area was established. And so all we can come up with now as far as the success of it is the fact that there are several rockfish species that are now increasing in population very dramatically. But baseline information is critically important.
Yeah, I'll find you. Excuse me.
Keep going.
Keep going. Address the issue. Let's say you get a 3 Marine Reserves put in place, and the concept is for marine research. Everybody's on board, which I think could actually move fairly fast. Talk to me about the time, a time certain to do that assessment. In other words, you don't want to put them in place, and you have no obligation to do the assessment, and they're sitting there. So there's got to be something, I think, in the process that if you're going to put them in place, within 2 years, you've got to be starting on the assessment. Otherwise, it's like setting off some forest off to the side till it burns to the ground because you've got no obligation to do anything.
In my opinion, and it is just mine, I'm not speaking in this case for OPAC or anyone else for that matter, but in my opinion, the baseline studies to see what is in an area that has been identified as a marine reserve or will be implemented as a marine reserve, the baseline study needs to be done nearly simultaneously with that designation, and then followed up in no more than a 5-year interval of reassessment or reevaluation of what happens within that area. And there again, not just within that area, but
adjacent
reference area, yeah, next to it that is open to fishing, so we can see over time the benefits that may accrue to a area where there's no extraction.
Yeah. Continue.
Please continue.
You mentioned that you met with the state police and they had some concerns because of costs of enforcement and this type of thing, and you did too, and that these should be accessible to be watched from the beach. I'm not certain that those two things are really, without causing economic analysis, I mean, the impact are, in fact, workable at the same time. You know, that's what I did for 28 years.
I understand.
If policy is developed strictly for enforcement, you may not get the best policy. If the game officer isn't smart enough to figure out how to get his job done, he can go work traffic. I'll get a good game officer. They probably wouldn't like to hear me say that, but that's how I feel.
They'll be pulling over tonight,
yeah.
Representative.
Representative Olson will be talking to me today.
I'm sure.
Another issue was the time frame as to whether or not these things would be permanent. I don't believe in permanent. I think we need to evaluate them. We might find out, hey, this isn't a good place to have one. Let's do away with this and let's move it somewhere else. So I think we need to have flexibility where we have them and the ability to move them. It may cause a great effect there. Well, let's go have a great effect somewhere else and see what happens when we take that away.
Representative Krieger, Chair Boone, that has been addressed in the current policy guidance document by OPAC, where we have established adaptive management for that purpose.
Okay. And then the last one is, I really feel, and it's come up several people, if you had three of them on the mid-coast, south coast, north, and those are a little bit different habitats, and we're talking about November of 08 trying to get something in place, and people say we can't do it. I think with the right people working out of the governor's office and having coastal input, I think it's very doable. But when you try to get to 8 or 9 large ones that are threatening to people, then you're never going to get there by November of 08. So I think we need to be looking at the what is realistic in the number and the size to get those in place within that time frame.
In response to your concern, Representative Krieger, the current timeline has been established for the purposes of trying to determine the overall cost of however many reserves we can that will be proposed. And then the process then evolves down to the relevant state agencies such as Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Division of State Lands and Land Conservation Development Commission. And they go through another process. So to my knowledge, no way a marine reserve would be established off the Oregon coast in less than a year and a half or 2 years under the current timeline. So the deadline that OPAC has been given was purely to determine how many reserves we're going to be suggesting and the cost for those, each of those reserves, which would include the baseline, the monitoring, and the enforcement primarily. And then the legislature would determine if, in fact, if that funding was going to be available. And this is long-term funding. It isn't just 2 or 3 years. It's 10, 15, maybe 20 years in some cases. So it's a long-term commitment. And your suggestion that maybe we start with 2 or 3 or 4, and right now we have on board two areas, Port Orford and Depot Bay, suggesting marine reserves within their areas that the fisheries can live with. 2 or 3 more may be more in the ballpark of what we can afford in this state. And again, I want to stress that there is not a crisis. We don't need to do these to save fish. We need to do these to find out more about fish.
Yeah, and so I think also, Frank, since we talked, there's another area north of Port Orford about Black Hawk Point that would have very little impact on anybody. Only the fall fishing on troll and a little on possibly the soft sand, soft beach area for crabbing. And it's nothing to say that you couldn't actually utilize that by allowing that in there. That's only an October, November season on the salmon. And monitor that with that type of a fishery there. Compare it to adjacent areas where that wasn't allowed. Did it change anything in those areas? So looking at it that way, that would be a good opportunity there. And they're willing to offer that one up.
Chair Boone and Representative Krieger, I think that during the conducting of the outreach by Sea Grant, and we have two extremely capable people heading that project up, that these kinds of proposals, first of all, are being stated by Sea Grant that you guys better get on the bus because it's left the station already, and if you want any sort of say-so in where marine reserves are going to be placed and how big they'll be, you need to let us know. So I see a lot more of that coming from the coastal communities and fishing groups along the Oregon coast.
Thank you. Maybe just more of a comment than anything else. I definitely share all the concerns you just spelled out for us, and I agree with the money part, which I don't see in this bill. But, you know, 100 years in Mother Nature's a blink of an eye. And, you know, I love to fish, and you go where the fish are. They're always moving around. We could establish a reserve today, keep it there for 100 years, and we still may not have a baseline, to be quite frank with you, the way it works out there. So now that does not mean I'm opposed to establishing areas where we do study what's going on. I think that is a good idea, not just for the health of the ocean, but for the management of this resource that we all take advantage of. I just want my good friends down there stated my case earlier, but I just can't keep my mouth shut. The idea of good science is irrefutable, that concept. We all say good science. But you know what? Good science is like family values. It means one thing to someone and another to the next. And it's wildly thrown around in this building. It drives me crazy. But I appreciate you coming here and saying what you're saying here today, because there's no money here in this building, I can see, and we're going to have to take care of that, and that's a struggle. But whatever I've said this several times. I don't live on the coast. I want the folks that live down there driving this train. And we have to give you the resources to do this. And if we don't, we're just doing things to make us feel good. So I do appreciate all your effort down there, though. Thank you.
Chair Boone and Representative Schaffler, I appreciate your comments, and they're well taken. And we're trying to reflect that in the OPAC process so that we're responsive to the folks that are most affected by whatever we do.
Right.
And Rep. Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Warren, I just want to tell you, hi, y'all. Did your excellent reputation precede you? And thank you for all you've done.
Well, thank you.
I was going to bring up what Representative Schaffler brought up. Is number one, I've been here 8 years, and we haven't yet been able to come to a definition of science. So, you know, maybe this is when we'll get it. But why don't you work on it for us? You seem very, very competent anyway. But that is an issue.
Appreciate it. And you're bringing up a good point.
Secondly, Madam Chair, may I?
Please.
Do you know, are we the only neighbor, the only ocean neighbor who doesn't have marine reserves on both coasts?
California right now has the majority of the marine reserves. There are some, for example, Whale Cove, Little Whale Cove near Lincoln City has been a reserve for, I think, about 20 years or longer. But reserves, no-take marine reserves, are presently in marine waters, are not present in Oregon, or to the best of my knowledge in the state of Washington. Until you get into Puget Sound, they do have some reserves there. And it depends on the definition of the reserve, what it's set up for, but the type that we're looking at for Oregon are no-take marine reserves, which prohibits any sort of extraction of fish or other items from that designated area. And again, to my knowledge, there are none in Washington, on the coast of Washington or the coast of Oregon, that would have any major effect on fisheries.
Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair, may I clarify, did you say ours would be a no-take reserve?
Yes.
Okay, got it. And then lastly, I'm having a hard time understanding. I am a steelheader, I'm a fisherwoman. Oh, we like to say we're all fishers now, so there's no discrimination. Is that okay with you? We
That's
call
fine
ourselves
with me.
Fishers. Okay.
Don't argue with her.
I'm putting that in the dictionary. I'm curious because I cannot picture going out, you know, fishing, and I don't know if a reserve is 4 miles square, 3 miles square. What are we talking about? I mean, what are they usually? 10 miles of the beach?
Chair Boone, Representative Nelson, the OSP report was, in their report, they made a request that when we establish marine reserves, and I'm familiar with this from the enforcement perspective, because at the PFMC level, we have areas that we close off for various purposes. And those areas are always concern to the enforcement people that they be stipulated in lines of latitude or longitude. In other words, most fishermen today have GPS systems where they can tell when they're on one side of the line or the other. But from an enforcement perspective as well as a compliance perspective, it's important that we draw straight lines, not circles and not depth curves and that sort of area to designate where the closed area would be. Did I answer your question?
Well, but I'm just curious. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Just want to know how much, we were talking about latitude and longitude. How big is a reserve?
That is yet to be determined.
What would it be in California?
There's been that suggestion by several people in Oregon, but the size and spacing of the reserves is yet to be determined by our scientific and technical advisory committee, which are primarily scientists.
Oh.
And they will tell us, in order to be big enough to be meaningful for the purpose of research, but yet small enough not to have a significant economic effect on the existing fisheries. So that's, kind of an indescribable factor at this point, but we will know more about that within the next 2 months.
And now we're going to try to get David on the phone. I'm going to call up Scott Browning. We have Scott Browning, Russell Smith, Bill Cluding, and Bill Nutting left to testify, so I want to make sure. And thank you very much, Frank, for most interesting testimony.
Goodness, a lot of
so, knowledge. Scott, come on up, and then we'll get David on the phone, and we'll try to get everybody in here. So,
I have another pending engagement in about 20 minutes. I'm Russ Smith from CDA.
Are you? Oh, okay. Do you want to switch then? Is that all right with you? Thank you, Scott. Okay, great. Yeah, then you wouldn't be.
And we have just till 11:30, is that
correct? Right. Yeah, we end at 11:30.
We
so
only have 20
we're trying
minutes.
Trying to make.
Also,
I want to make sure everybody gets a chance.
I'm Russell Smith. I'm secretary of the Pacific City Dorymen's Association, which represents about 460 small boat fishermen in a wide variety of capacities, from processors, commercial boats, the vast majority being recreational fishermen. Our window of opportunity is very short. I heard some figures about a six-month window. With our small boats, which range from about 20 to 25 feet, which is a open access fleet or a direct access, meaning we launch from the beach, we land on the beach. There's no port, no wharf, things like that. Our fishing window is about 4 months. And we have a statement that we have would like to put on the record here today. And if you bear with me, I'll read that real quick. My eyeball's out. Our association does not support the Marine Reserves Program as it's currently proposed. This position on the issue was adopted May 26, 07 by 89 members representing our membership, and the position was reaffirmed at our August 25th meeting. We make no recommendation for reserves in any other location inside Oregon's three-mile jurisdiction, because for decades our members and officers have participated in state and federal regulatory processes. We understand the existing constraints and burdens already placed on citizens who work with our valuable marine resources. Any questions?
Anybody have any? Do you have that written? That do you want to submit it, or do you want
to? I would.
I mean, we have you on the record.
Give you a copy
okay.
of that.
Okay, yeah. That would be great. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Now, Scott, you want to come up, and then we'll try to get David.
It's on speakerphone, so we'll just call him. He's
okay.
He'll be on.
Okay,
ready.
Great. Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and I have a copy of this too, actually.
My name's Scott Browning. I'm a longtime resident of Garibaldi. I had a prepared speech, but much of it is not relevant after some of the testimony here. I'm glad to see that you're approaching this with great caution. There may be some other issues you're not aware of, in that for many years from 75 to 200 fathoms for the entire length of the coast has been a no-fishing zone. The charter boats are restricted to inside 40 fathoms, except for some limited fishing outside of 100 for halibut and tuna. This restricted no-fishing zone at this time adds up to thousands of square miles. Any further restrictions at this time, especially near my home port, would definitely have an economic impact. So I'm glad to see that you're being apprehensive about parts of this. Okay, where was I? And lastly, Section 6. What emergency is going to be declared to exist?
We always get that question. And there's just a large permutation of basically, what is it? It's with, as if it's not an emergency, it takes 90 days.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's immediate.
Sounds true.
From the end of session. Yes. Yeah. Rep. Krieger, you want to answer that?
First name, Scott.
Yes.
Scott Browning.
Could you kind of tell us your take on this possible salmon problem in the ocean and what the effect that's going to have? We getting that shut down based on the projected numbers for next summer? Out of the, you know, the Sacramento and down that way, and just kind of how you feel. But also, maybe if you can remember, when this shuts down, you get an effort shift mm-hmm. from this fishery into that fishery.
Mm-hmm.
Those two issues.
Because of the failure in the salmon fishery and the hatcheries, has been more of a river-based problem. There has been quite a bit of speculation that it's also affected by ocean conditions. There will be a shift, but many fishermen have already worked towards that shift. I myself sold my salmon permit and got completely out of the fishery because it quite literally was no longer viable for me.
Okay.
I hate to hear that because I love salmon.
Well, my father quit in the early 70s when things got difficult. He shifted to crab.
Yeah.
And many other fishermen had to shift because you just couldn't make a dollar on something that's not there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any questions for Scott?
I'm sad now.
Well, and Scott and Russ are constituents of mine too, so I have a lot of constituents in here today. Thank you for making the trip down here and stay in touch.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Can I just make a comment while you go ahead? And
yeah, we're going to dial in.
Go ahead and
David,
dial.
David
I,
Allen.
I just think it's important to remember that the bill before us is not necessarily taking a position on the establishment of marine reserves. The bill that we're talking about is a discussion of what the legislative role in that whole conversation should be. And so I want to be careful because I think that some of the testimony is kind of based on what people think of the idea and the concept of developing a system of marine reserves. And the bill's more intended to decide what the legislature's role in that conversation is, not to take a position for or against.
But I've received documentation from the Dorymen and from several groups in Tillamook County stating that they wanted us to take a role in this. And that was a big step forward, I think, for a lot of people because they were pretty firm against marine reserves per se at all. So
that's all I was
that's
trying
one
to
of the reasons we did the bill. So. Okay, thank you. Okay, now we'll dial David. And hopefully he's still around. And then after David will be Bill Cluding and Bill Nutting. And is there Bill Nutting here? Maybe it's the same. We've got two different sheets here. Maybe it's the same guy, Bill. Okay.
Can I get your attention?
Good morning, McPherson Dittner Diaz.
Maybe speak with David Allen.
Madison, what's going?
The Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy.
Okay, and what is your name?
Sue Marshall.
Hold on, please.
Thanks.
Diligent.
Yes. Good. Good.
Anybody I hire her.
Okay, she passes.
Protective, yeah.
Maybe can I take a message, please?
Yeah. She should expect
this. Hi, David.
Hi, David. It's Debbie Boone.
Hi, Chair Boone. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to our, you're on speakerphone in committee, so
okay.
Be careful what you say.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. We can hear you just fine, and we're ready. You need to identify yourself for our record, and then you can go with your testimony.
Okay. For the record, my name is David Allen. I'm a resident of Newport. And actually, I've been watching you on live stream video, so I've been watching your testimony the past hour and a half.
Oh, good.
And just to give you some of the committee members who aren't familiar with who I am, I'm a currently a member of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. I've been a member since, I was appointed, I believe, in late 2004 and have been on OPAC in attending meetings since June of 2005. I represent the coastal public at large. That's my current representation. And I have had several years at OPAC to get some background and experience on a lot of the issues we're dealing with, including some of the statutory issues, which I've been following closely over the years, which is why I'm glad that you're taking a role in this process. I think it's important to deal with this from a statutory standpoint, and there are some issues that I believe might provide an opportunity for clarification. One other thing that I mentioned in my written testimony, I just want to state for the record, I'm here in my own personal capacity, even though I'm a member of OPAC. I'm not here on behalf of OPAC. I'm not here on behalf of any other person or entity. The comments I make today are my own personal opinion, given the background and experience that I've gained over the past several years being a member of OPAC. And one other thing is, I recently got OPAC, made a request to OPAC to form a subgroup, and this was in the November meeting in Gold Beach, to form a study group to review the ocean plan and the territorial sea plan. I co-chair that group, and our first meeting is February 26th here in Newport. And a lot of the issues that we'll be dealing with will be a review of both those plans, so I think it's timely that you're having your discussion right now regarding some of the statutory issues, because they do pertain directly to some of the issues that I think might need some clarification to help us along in this process.
And David, that's one of the reasons we did the bills, because of the time frame, and we knew that our deadline was before your first meeting, so we wanted to keep things moving.
Great. I'm not really here in support or against House Bill 3609. What I am here today to do is to point out some procedural issues that I believe have come up over the past during the OPAC process that I believe might need some clarification in the statute to help us along in the process. And I have outlined some of those issues in the written comments that I provided to you. Does everyone have a copy of it? It would be the one dated February 5th.
It was on the dice.
It's right in front of me.
Okay, great. Well, the first, I might as well just go point by point. Number one is basically just insert the territorial sea plan on page one, line two. I think what's come up over the past, I would say, year and a half, especially with regards to Marine Reserve, is if you go through this process and we actually do recommend that Marine Reserve move forward, there is language in the current statute which talks about how that process is to move forward, and that's right now currently recommending amendments to the ocean plan. And that's actually the Oregon Ocean Resources Management Plan, but I'll call it the ocean plan for short. At your January 14th meeting, some issues were brought up about how it might be more appropriate that any amendments with regards to marine reserves would probably be more appropriate for the territorial sea plan. As most of the committee members know, there are two plans in place. One is the Ocean Plan, which is more of a broad policy framework type of document that was created in the early 1990s. And from that Ocean Plan, the more specific Territorial Sea Plan was created with more of the management prescriptions and more specific management plans. The Ocean Plan also covers a greater area, not only covers the 3-mile territorial sea, but it actually covers the stewardship area, which extends further out. There was some testimony that the Territorial Sea Plan might be the more appropriate document for any such amendments regarding the Marine Reserve. I think that's probably accurate. However, what I would like to propose, just to keep the door open so that the statute doesn't foreclose any ability to amend the OSHA plan, is one of my suggestions, which is to, if you're going to, for instance, on page 2, line 1, you talk about in section 3 that a marine reserve or marine protected area may be established only by amendment to the Oregon Ocean Resources Management Plan. My suggestion would be to add further language and to say the Oregon Ocean Resources Management Plan or Territorial Sea Plan or both. I think that allows the flexibility during this process that we're going through in OPAC, and the agencies will have to go through to have that flexibility to decide whether it just is an amendment to the sea plan, the territorial sea plan, or the ocean plan might need some further amendment. So I always think it's better from a statutory standpoint to allow some of that flexibility for the agencies and other entities to have to see where the more appropriate changes might need to take place. So I would add that language on page 2, line 1. Moving back to page 1, you have a definition of marine protected area and marine reserve. Now, the marine protected area, which was, I believe, this is something that Legislative Council came up with based on some of the documents that OPEC has been working on. Frank Lawrence mentioned the policy guidance document, which is right now only a working draft. We're still going through the outreach process through Sea Grant, and they'll be coming back to us with some recommendations, and then we'll be working more on this policy guidance document. Right now, as Frank mentioned, there is a definition of both marine protected area and marine reserve. The marine protected area definition is really one that was created by a presidential executive order, and that seems to be one that's fairly commonly used. I don't think I've heard any real issue over that definition for marine protected area. However, the marine reserve definition, which is actually a marine reserve, is a subset of a marine protected area. That has created some considerable discussion. So my suggestion is, rather than trying to come up with a statutory definition, it might actually be beneficial, as I mentioned in my suggested comments or suggested edits, to actually make that part of the process in Section 3, meaning that if we do move forward with marine reserves and we do recommend marine reserves, that we include as part of that recommendation as an amendment to the Territorial Sea Plan the definition of marine reserve. I think that probably makes more sense because I think there's still a lot more discussion that needs to go into what the definition is going to be and the final definition that will be utilized. So the language I propose for page 1, lines 13 through 17 would be to define marine reserve to mean an area of the Pacific Ocean off the Oregon coast as defined by amendments to the Oregon Ocean Resources Management Plan or Territorial Sea Plan or both under Section 3 of this 2008 Act. That, I think, will allow the opportunity for the agencies, OPAC, and other entities to come up with their definition of marine reserve as they move forward with any possible recommendations. That's just a suggestion. It actually takes you guys off the hook and puts the burden more on OPEC and the agencies to come up with that definition through this process. Finally, on page 2, line 5, you speak to how amendments that are proposed to establish a marine reserve are to have certain criteria. In subsection 8, you speak to provide procedures for monitoring the marine reserve or marine protected area. I would add define language and evaluating. So it would read, provide procedures for monitoring and evaluating the marine reserve or marine protected area. The word evaluation is a critical component of what any recommendation, as Representative Krieger and others have mentioned. Not only are we talking about monitoring the marine reserve and enforcing the marine reserve, but we have to have an ongoing evaluation over a period of time to see how effective the marine reserve are for whatever goals and objectives are established for that particular marine reserve. So I think the word and evaluating should be inserted in there to make that, I think, a more effective criteria. And moving on to page 2, lines 20 to 22, this gets back to giving the opportunity to amend either the ocean plan or territorial sea plan. And this would actually, let me back up. This actually is a whole separate issue that I think is really important to bring up right now. Page 2, lines 20 through 22, it's actually one of the council duties, which is to periodically review the territorial sea plan and submit recommendations. This is one of the reasons why I believe it was important to create the study group, because we haven't gone through that periodic review for several years, so I think it's important to start that process. The question that I've had, and I'm coming at this from a lawyer, I'm an attorney, so I always read the statutes very carefully, and there's always different interpretations that you can come up with. But if you look at the second sentence of subsection 1A under 1 ORS 196443, the way it reads now is, and I'll read it out loud for the record, it says, the council shall recommend deletions to the territorial sea plan of all site designations and management prescriptions to the Land Conservation and Development Commission. Now, I've read through that language many times, and it seems to me you can come up with a couple of different, you know, what I believe to be plausible interpretations. One would be that that's a mandate for OPAC to actually recommend deletions for those site designations and management prescriptions, meaning they have to actually recommend deletions. The other way I read it is that if OPAC was to decide to recommend deletions to the territorial sea plan, LCDC would be the agency that would actually have to consider those recommendations. I really don't know what is the more plausible interpretation. I do know it's an issue, and it's an issue that's going to probably come up at our study group. So if any clarification can be brought into play right now at the legislature to clarify this language, that would be very helpful. I know that House Bill 3534 back in 2003, which Representative Krieger and Commissioner John Griffith were involved in, this is actually where some of this language change occurred. So there might be some legislative intent which actually underlies why the language reads the way it does. I wasn't there in 2003, so I really can't speak to that legislative intent, but possibly Representative Krieger or Commissioner John Griffith or others might actually be able to add some clarification as to what this language actually means in the second sentence of subsection 1A and further clarify it for us.
And David, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
If you could, but don't leave out anything that is really super important.
Well, if you're going to have a session tomorrow,
yeah.
I could also testify tomorrow. I don't have to finish today if you have other people who are here.
Why don't we do that? If that's convenient for you, we can continue tomorrow.
Because I have some important points that I want to bring up regarding the economic impact analysis under
Subsection
1B that I think needs to be clarified as well. So that
well, thank you. And I apologize. I know it's just we just had so many interesting people in today and short time.
I'm more than happy to appear by telephone conference tomorrow if that's going to work from your end.
That would be great. Thank you.
David?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Oh, this is State Representative Donna Nelson. Do you have a copy of the input from John Griffith about what he thought should be changed?
You know, actually, I believe Representative Nelson that I got a copy of it along with several other people. I believe he submitted it to Representative Boone or possibly Andy, which was the committee administrator. I'm not sure, but I do know that he did submit it.
Okay, I just wondered, because there's some additional changes that he's recommended that I thought you might want to include so we can get it all done at once.
Well, actually, there are some that he's brought forward. I'm not sure if I have the time to finish mine right now. Representative Boone, do you want me to do that tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do it tomorrow. If that works for you, that would be great.
And I
would appreciate it.
This may be available tomorrow as well, so he could speak to his own suggested edits.
Okay. Thank you, David. We'll call you tomorrow then.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, Bill Cluding?
Oh.
Because I think David does have more.
Do we have any that are more of a...
That's it. Bill's the last guy.
Okay,
yeah. We tried to take all the...
I figured you probably...
Away people.
Thank you, Madam Chair Boone. Committee, for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. I was hoping a younger group could have stayed to set through this whole thing. They're going to be the ones leading this in a few years.
Right.
First and foremost, let me put on the record. Oregon has the best fish habitat in the world. We have had, and now it's even better. The state stepped forward and started the Oregon Plan. Private, small and large landowners stepped forward. Volunteer workers by the thousands. Madam Chair Boone, I want to thank you for your part. I know you helped out on this.
I was.
We were restoring streams that really didn't need restored compared to what the rest of the world has. I can guarantee you, when these eggs are laid in the gravel in our streams, they hatch. The smolts grow. But once they leave that river system, once they hit the ocean, we've lost control. We can't control when the ocean turns upside down and literally just wipes out the whole system. You've seen on the news just this last fall where the crabs were laying 2 feet deep in the depths of the ocean. That's the crabs that would be in our markets. One of the biggest mistakes we made was putting computer chips in our fish going into the oceans. That told us where they were, when they were there, and that information got handed out around the world. For an example, on fish habitat, just less than 40 miles from west of here, as the crow flies, is the Swets River. Back in the 80s, Fish and Wildlife, federal and state, went to the Swets River and they trapped thousands of our Chinook salmon, thousands of our coho salmon, and our steelhead, and took them to the Great Lakes. There was not a fish like that in those Great Lakes, and they had some of the worst streams, and still have some of the worst streams for habitat that you can imagine. But you can turn the TV on Saturday mornings, and you can see a sports fishery in the Great Lakes. They're landing our salmon, our steelhead, in the Great Lakes throughout their whole season. And what do we have on the Swets right now? That used to support a town of 250, a large mill, and people from 50 miles around drove up there and fished. Right now, 20 miles of that stream is shut off to all fishing because there is no fish. You can hardly even count a fish returning in that system. Again, for the record, we have the habitat. We can raise them, but we can't bring them back. Thank you.
Thank you. That's
yeah, I think, Madam Chair, thank you. I think Bill makes a good point. I think these marine reserves will be very beneficial in measuring things like in figuring out the habits of bottom fish, crab, shellfish, things that aren't so transitory. We cannot make a reserve big enough to really study what's going on out there with salmon, and that's all there is to it. They move around. So I heard what the good fisherman said about salmon, and I can appreciate locking up areas where you can't go out and take advantage of this resource. That I understand. But, you know, salmon go all over the world. You know, there's no way we're going to be able to ever, I don't see marine reserves in Oregon figuring out our solutions, what's happening in the ocean as far as salmon. It's the bottom fish and the shellfish, I think, it will help with. Thank you.
Just briefly, one of the reasons Bill are having such great success in the Great Lakes, they don't have marine mammals.
Amen, brother.
And they don't have all of the bird problems that we do.
The what problems?
Bird problems.
President Krieger, that's a very good point, and I didn't want to get into that.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thanks. Any other business to come before our committee and before you all leave like cats, like salmon? We stand adjourned.
Boom, huh?